and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast, where we interview runners in all stages of their running careers on their first marathon experiences to show you that anyone can run a marathon. Today, we get two marathon stories, one full of more highs than lows and one complete mental battle. If you're a runner who has experienced or is worried about a race day where you're really fighting with yourself and your body on if you can do it or not, this episode will show you that with support around you and a little bit of perseverance, you can do anything. Without further ado, let's jump right into the stories. Please welcome Nicole. Nicole, thank you so much for spending some time with us this weekend. How's your weekend going so far?
Absolutely fantastic.
I know you read, what was the run that you led yesterday?
Once a month, I get the opportunity to lead a run with Free People Movement or FP Movement and HOKA. So
that's awesome.
Super fun.
Got a group out there. Yeah, that's great.
We were out running a tropical storm yesterday. It was a little gray, but just Florida things. We were fine.
Yeah, but you made it. You made it before the rain and everything. That's all that matters.
Only do 2 miles, please, because it's going to start pouring at 9 a.m. and we finished at 8:55. So
I'm sure you didn't have to twist anyone's arm to do an easy run yesterday. But that's awesome. Cool. Well, I'm excited to break down your running journey today. Let's kind of just start from the beginning. How'd you get introduced to this world in the first place?
Well, first exposed to it. Well, it's a tricky question because I don't remember like when I first started running as a child. You know, you just kind of get thrown into things. Your mom's like, let's do this 5K. And then you go the whole 5K.
For sure.
I'd say a little more serious. My brother had run cross country in high school and I saw him do that. And he's 4 years older than me. So I ran in high school. Wasn't good, never been good, never will be good. But that was like the first exposure. And then seriously started running about 4 years ago and have been consistently doing it. And now I actually think I like it. In high school, I definitely just did it for the social aspect. So
Yeah. So you had the classic high school runner to serious runner pipeline that we hear. When do you feel like you started to turn a leap with it where it wasn't maybe something you were forced to do, but you were choosing to do it?
Oh, shoot. Well, I'd say when I was training for, I think it was my fourth half marathon, I felt a little more serious because I finally started to realize, and this is when below average running like first started.
Yeah.
And the motto was like, embrace the pace. And I finally kind of started to accept that, like, listen, we're not like, we all are not going to qualify for Boston. It's not going to happen for some of us. So stop like trying to kill yourself to run faster when like, you're not going to be able to run 7 minute miles consistently. And when I just started to enjoy it and I literally just started to embrace the pace, like as cheesy as that sounds, and just being okay with being slower, it was way more fun. It was way less pressure because I'm like, I can't do that. Like, no matter how bad I want it, it might take way more training, but I'm not going to get there. So once I kind of was fine with my pace, it's been great.
Yeah. Just took a lot of the pressure off for sure. Well, I guess backing up just a little bit then, before you got to that point where you like had a better relationship with your pace, like what were you doing during that time that was making it tough on you?
Well, definitely like that would take you back to high school. And then it's just like, you're seeing your varsity runners who are cranking out 7 minute miles, no problem.
Yeah.
And you're like, shoot, I'm killing myself trying to run under 10. Like, it's really hard. I remember like running races and I had a heck of a time trying to run under 30 minutes for a 5K in high school. Like, I would only get it a very few times. And it just sucked because you saw these other people on your team running, you know, 21 minutes. You're like, crap, like, how do you do that? And I just never could get it. So then you're like a little ashamed because you're like, oh, I'm not very good. And then in high school, you really play the comparative game. So
So you kind of tied your relationship with running, I guess, in the beginning with pace a lot, it sounds like. But it's great that you were able to get to a point where you started to kind of let go of that. Was there like a specific moment where you had some like epiphany about it or anything like that, or a race experience where you started to maybe care a little bit less about pace, or just more organic kind of fell into it?
I don't really know like when. It was just when I was training for that fourth one, I like kind of stopped realizing. And even when I had first started below average running as the joke, and I would post my times, I remember like running really fast to try to have like a split under like low 11s because it was really hard. But then I was like, but why? Like, you're not supposed to run hard every workout, and society is going to say I'm slow if I'm not running an 8 minute mile, and that would quite literally kill me to do. So who cares?
Yeah.
And I literally like, I feel like it's as you age too. I think I was like 24 when I started it. I was like, I don't care anymore. like, you're going to think what you want of me, and at least I'm moving my body, like, helping my mental health, my physical health, all these things. Like, if you're going to sit there and, you know, quote unquote, talk crap about me, you're going to do it regardless. Like, I don't care anymore.
Right.
So I just think when you get older and you, like, stop caring, you're like, I don't need to straighten my hair every day. I don't need to wear, like, makeup. It's,
yeah.
It's one and the same, I feel like, with that.
Yeah. You just grow up and kind of mature in the sense of, like, people are going to think what they think, and I'm just going to do what makes me happy. So,
exactly.
No, I think that's great. So I started to kind of, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said just with age, like, yeah. You know when they say your frontal lobe starts to develop?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's what it was.
that's when your running career can take a shift, I guess. Cool. And then from there, how did you progress? So you ran a couple half marathons first, and then when did you start thinking about, I'm going to run the full thing?
I'd always said I would never run a full. I feel like that's everyone's
famous last words. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Well, I think when I signed up for it, I had the idea. I remember calling my running coach, Coach Alicia from What Runs You, in November. And I was aiming to do the Pittsburgh Marathon in May. So I think I had like 7 months. And at that time, I had signed up for three half marathons in like Florida race season is like January through March, which mm-hmm. is really common for other people, but it's cool down here for us.
Yeah.
I signed up for three halves in that period. And she's like, we can use that to train to the full. And so I think I signed up for the marathon. I had done six. And then after doing those other three, maybe it was either six total or it was like nine. I don't remember. I had done so many halves that I finally felt like, okay, you're kind of just doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You want to take it a step further. Like, are you ready, you know, mentally, emotionally, and physically to take the jump ahead? Because eventually I feel like I not got bored with the half, but I was too comfortable with the half.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Definitely.
And then also there was some peer pressure from social media. So I felt like, I feel like people want to see me go for the marathon. And if I'm giving people the confidence to run a half, if I'm obviously scared, you know, shitless to run 26.2, but if I can help someone realize I can do it, so can you, just with the proper training. And I remember calling my one friend who had just run her first. She went from zero to a marathon.
Yeah.
And she said, but no one just runs a marathon. You train to get there. And yeah. I kept thinking, I was like, but I'm going to train to get there. Like, I'm not just going to run 20 miles. I'm going to train to get to 20 miles. So that kind of, I don't really know if that answered it, but it was a weird thought process like that. And I went back and forth. But I was like, you know, you want to do this in your life, just do it.
Yeah. No, I think that makes total sense. It's like we've talked about a couple times on the show about like proving it to yourself as you go.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to go from zero to 26 or 13 to even 26 mm-hmm. In a day. So you run that 15-mile run and you start to prove it to you a little bit more, and then 60 miles, 70 miles. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm like 4 miles within actually running yeah. this thing. And it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So I think that makes a lot of sense.
4 minutes and I'm done. That's like one.
Yeah, exactly. 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 So you do kind of wrap your head around it, I think, the closer you get.
Mm-hmm.
And you were working with a coach. Was that something that you were working with while you were running your half marathons as well, or you took on a coach for mm-hmm. your marathon?
So she started coaching me as I was training for my fourth one.
Cool.
So I've been with her for almost 4 years now, I think, three and a half, whatever, one and the same. So
yeah.
With that, she also helped like shift my perspective of training, of, you know, you build your confidence to run. I had like a big goal of breaking 2:30 in my half, which took years and years, but she's like, you start your confidence of like, you know, you ran this time, but now we're going to do this. So just shifting your perspective on how you approach training and racing, which it seems like it'd be common sense, but like, if you're new to this, you would have no idea these little things of her even just saying, we're also training your body, but we're trying to build your confidence. I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense. She's like, physically, you could run a marathon once you run like 16, 17 miles. It'd be hard, but you could do it. But we want to go to 20. So, you know, you're confident you can make it to 26.2. I'm like, that makes sense.
Yeah, I like
so
that.
Things like that.
Yeah. And I get a lot of questions for coaches or just from people who are thinking about getting into coaching about like when it makes sense to get into to join a coaching mm-hmm. team or to hire a coach. Did you have a point where you felt like you needed to hire a coach to like push you beyond what you were already doing?
Yeah, I think so. Cause I think the good thing with running in high school, I had like a pretty strong understanding. Like I knew how to stretch, I knew how to warm up. I knew how to race like a 5K to an extent. I had a lot of knowledge, which was helpful. But going for the long distance, there's a lot of things that you don't know and you can read about it, but I feel like maybe a coach helps. I also like having a coach because, one, it's accountability. That's pretty nice. Two, I mean, usually your coach has run these races 100 times and she'll tell you about her experiences of like in her battles. And it's validating knowing that even when you are like a really good, really good marathoner, those problems are still going to relate to someone who's trying to break 6 hours in their marathon, things like that. So, you know, and mentally, you know, not playing the comparative game, taking your easy runs easy. Like she'll look at my dad and be like, dude, you went too fast. Like, even though it felt easy, that was too fast. You need to slow down 20 seconds a mile. But if you are so nervous about a new goal, and it's, to me, I felt like that was good having a coach for the marathon because it was such an unknown, a new thing to me. I wanted to have someone who has done this backwards, forwards, sideways, diagonally, whatever. So I can lean on them to ask every question that I'm going to have and help me get to there.
Yeah.
That's my final answer.
No, I think that's smart. Yeah, because it, like, you're right. When you're running your first marathon, even if you had like a decent amount of running experience leading up to your first one, so even if you're at that point where everything's not brand new, I still think that there's a lot of unknown. Even when you run your 20 mile run, there's still 6 miles there that are unknown. So having somebody that's you're able to kind of ask those questions to, I'm sure is extremely helpful. So cool. So had your coach, had your you said that you had picked your marathon at that point, right? When you had had started talking about it with your coach.
Yeah.
So had everything on the calendar.
I remember calling her. I was at work and I stepped into the lobby to make the phone call. And I was like, all right, what I'm about to say is like really scary. And she probably thought I was going to say, oh, I broke my leg or something. It's like, no, I think
something.
I She's like, finally. So scary. But yeah,
I was like, all right, what do we do from here? I need some direction now. I've done the first step.
She's like, all right, you're locked in. I was like, oh, wait. Because I didn't actually register for the race until like 2 months before. Because I was like, oh, okay. Wedding, something happens. I just like told myself, this is the one I'm doing. But I was like, I don't want to commit. Like, too scared to commit.
I want to see how it goes first. That makes sense. Yeah. Cool. So then she starts to, I'm sure, lay out the training plan for you. Like, what were your initial thoughts when you were taking a look at everything that you had kind of bit off at that point?
Holy shit.
Yeah.
It's like... a lot.
It's gonna be a lot. Yeah.
And I had noticed, obviously I had it like I did it for 6 months is how I did it. And we based it around a few half marathons, which was very helpful as well. And like using those races as practice marathon days of like, you're waking up at this time and eating all that stuff. So for me, I found it once I realized this, like to zoom out and look at the entire 6 months, it's like extremely stressful. It's too much to chew. Like you can't handle it. If I focus, I had like in my planner, I'd break it down to each week. I would write down what my long run is. I'd write down like recovery, speed, whatever it was. But in the week, I would only focus on like today being Sunday. Oh, you have 12 miles you need to run. Great. Keep in mind, like only focusing on Sunday, 12 miles, but keep in mind, hey, tomorrow you have a 4 mile recovery run. Very easy. So I zoomed in essentially is what I did. Because if I zoomed out, I got really nervous. Because you're looking at, like, oh my God, I'm running 130 miles this month. What? That's a lot.
Yeah.
So zooming in so that you don't see the other stuff, I found really helpful. But just kind of keep in the back of your head, like, hey, this is a heavier mileage week. Just kind of like really take care of your body, like sleep-wise. But that's when I found it less daunting, was to not look at the whole picture, because that's not for the faint of heart. That was scary.
No, especially, when you see those high mileage weekends coming up and you're like, you're almost dreading it before it even happens to you. So I think it's smart to, maybe keep the blinders on a little bit and just focus on what's in front of you for sure.
That's an ignorance is bliss situation. Do not.
100%.
Don't worry about Sunday on Wednesday. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's for future your problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So then where did you feel like what distance did you hit, where you started to build a little bit of confidence, where you were like, okay, I'm not ready to sign up yet, because we know you did that a couple months before, but I'm starting to wrap my head around this thing.
I don't know. I don't know if I ever had that feeling, because I remember like my 15 mile long run, I did it with a half marathon. So that was really fun. 16, I did it with my coach, which was also really fun. 17 was the worst run of my entire life, and I really was like, this was absolutely horrible. 18 and 20 were both also decent, but I remember finishing 20 and I'm like, how am I supposed to run 6.2 more? Like, I'm tired. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
But obviously I knew at that point it was like, you're trusting your training. And at that point, a 10K feels like 2 miles because you're just delusional.
Yeah.
But I don't really know. I think when I hit those, anything past a half marathon, I believe that's when I signed up. Cause I was like, well, now you're like in it deep. But I don't really know if I had a moment where I felt fully ready. And I remember being at the start line for the marathon and I looked at Ellie cause I ran with my best friend Ellie and my cousin Lauren. And I was like, yeah, I'm either going to throw up. Like I don't feel, I just felt like every emotion, everything. I was like, I'm not ready. But it was one of those things. I was like, I feel like you're never fully ready for it. Cause it's so unknown. I was ready. I was fully ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all mental at that point. Like your body's ready. Everything's ready. Your coach is probably telling you you're ready. It's usually just your head that's telling you, maybe I can't do this. Even though you just trained for 6 months for this thing. It's kind of criminal how our brains play tricks on us like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so I hate to bring it up, but the 17 mile run, you said that one was the one that kicked you the most. What made it so bad compared to some of the other ones?
I don't know, but it was horrible. Like, it was so hard.
Just one of those.
Luckily, one of my friends in Miami, Sarah, we went to grad school together. Yeah. Every Sunday for all of training for 6 months, Sarah would be at my house at 5 a.m. I'd have the bike ready to go with the water, the fuel, snacks for her, the speaker. She brought safety vests because we would start when it's dark outside because it's super hot.
Yeah.
5 a.m. start every Sunday, and Sarah was there with me. So she did the 17-mile run with me, thank God, because my thing is, too, it was such an unknown distance. And I was like, anything over, like, 10 to 12, I'm, like, nervous if I collapse, like, just due to heat exhaustion, whatever, and there's no one there to see me. I'm just going to, like, be roadkill, essentially. So she was there for, like, safety purposes. And thank God I had her, because on that run, it was one of those things that I really needed her just to keep talking so I could not get in my head so bad of how bad I felt. I just think you're going to have a bad long run. That was mine. It was hot. It's humid as heck. It just was bad. Like, it was bad. But we got through it. And it was nice. Thank God I had her, because without having Sarah literally through every single long run on the bike, wasn't going to make it. And she was so funny because she's like, you know, I feel like I can't complain, but like my butt hurts from riding the bike. And I've never biked 17 miles before, but you've never run 17 miles. So I can't complain. I'm like, arguably, I think riding the bike is worse because you're not going fast. You're going at like a 13 minute pace. So,
right.
And so poor Sarah really, she worked hard too.
She did. That's great. Everybody needs a Sarah in their life to get them out of the house in the morning and get after it. But like you said, for safety too. No, that's perfect. Yeah. Good deal. But yeah, like you said, for safety too, we're like running in the winter, especially when it's really dark outside and it's first thing in the morning and you're out there, it's like, yeah, it's good to have somebody with you just to make sure you're safe and also for your peace of mind. I don't know if you're like me, but like anytime I have to do a long run alone and in the dark, I'm just super paranoid and can't like really be present in the run that I'm trying to run. So it's probably helps with peace of mind a lot.
You hear leaves like brushing in the wind and you're like, your heart rate spikes. But having a second person, you're like, I feel like I'm less likely to be attacked. So,
yeah, there's two of us. No one's going to take two of us, right?
The odds are
that's
more
logic. So, all right, cool. And so got through your long runs, got through the 20-mile run, and then you said that you were still feeling pretty kind of nervous up until race day. What were the logistics leading up to it? Did you have a long commute for your first marathon? Was it local? Like, what did all that look like?
So I did it in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I live in Miami, Florida. So that's like 1,200 miles north. You know, also Pittsburgh, very hilly. Very hilly. Miami, very flat. So did not train the elevation. My coach also said there isn't much we can do to prep you for it except doing like single leg strength movements because we do not have hills. Like I would run the bridges to the beach or in a parking garage. We don't have elevation. So whatever.
Yeah.
But my greatest strategy is the fact that it's so much cooler up there that basically I didn't sweat. And down here, all I do is sweat. So that was pretty nice. So that I feel like I kind of counteracted. But I had run the Pittsburgh half before, so I was a little familiar with it. I think Pittsburgh puts on a really great race. They have great volunteers, great crowd support, you know, proper aid on the course. So I felt safe in that aspect. That was good. But it's tough because it's like, do you want to know the entire course that you're going to run? like, or do you want to be familiar with the area? I'd rather you not know where you're going. And some people prefer knowing and not knowing. I think I prefer knowing. So I didn't know where I was turning, and that's a little challenging, but it's also fun. I don't know. But yeah, I was not very familiar with Pittsburgh, like, at all. So
yeah, I've heard the same. I've heard opposite. Even on this show, everybody's kind of had their own opinion. Some people like they like the courses where it's more of a lap structure, so that you go around once, you know where all the aid stations are, and then when you go around the second time, you know exactly where everything is. Yeah. And then some people are like, no, that throws me off. I feel like I'm running out of track and I'm bored and all that. So, yeah. So you're saying that you were kind of somewhere in the middle. You were like, it's okay, but you were hoping to know the course a little bit better.
Yeah, I just think, I don't know. And I had studied the course a lot too, but then when you're out there, it feels very different, obviously. And I've run a lot of like hometown races. Like I ran the Miami Fool, and I know that course backward, like the back of my hand. That I enjoyed more, knowing where I was at all times, because I was like, oh, I know you're about like 6 miles from the fit. Like, you're pretty close. But in Pittsburgh, I know we're at mile 22, but I actually don't know where we're at, like, at all. So I don't know. I'll do either.
Yeah.
I'll do if I know it, if I don't know. But
yeah, so. But I could see where it'd be. It takes a little bit more mental power too, if you if you don't know where you're going, to just like make sure you're paying attention. You can't really like zone out too much. You have to pay attention to what you're doing.
Well, when you're in the back too, and there's like not that many people in front of you, it's not like you can follow the leader, because sometimes there isn't. So
right. Yeah. Then you're just making decisions. Hopefully the volunteers are out there helping you with the turns and all that. But, and Pittsburgh, I would think, is a pretty big race. No, they have, do they have a good turnout?
Oh yeah. It's a great race. The only thing that really sucks with Pitt is, I kid you not, I think it rains almost every single year. It really does. But it's a fun course. The spectators are freaking awesome. You run down a few of the streets with like a lot of the bars, and these people are already day drinking at 7 a.m. cheering for you. Like, it's a fun city. It's, you got people passing out licorice and cupcakes and shots of Jack. Like, it's so much fun. I just really wish it would stop raining, because every time I've done it, I've done the half, I think twice, in the Fool, it's rained. I'm like, can we stop raining? I don't want to do this anymore. But that's not
fun in the rain.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, just bad luck. Okay, cool. Well, let's talk about race day then. Let's say, how was the first, like, well, I'll let you decide. Where was the first like 10 to 13 miles like for you?
Fun. A lot of fun. The initial, like, obviously waiting in the start chute's very, very stressful, right? And I still feel that way with any race today. It's like, just let me start, because you're giving me too much anticipation. So luckily I was running with Ellie and Lauren. We're the 26.2 crew. We run together, which is great. And I recommend for anyone doing a new milestone, find someone who's a stronger runner than you and bring them with you, because you can rely on them when you're dying. So without them, I would never have survived. So we're standing there together. My cousin Ryan jumped in literally 24 hours before. So there was now four of us running. I had a lot of family and friends like come out, which was freaking awesome. I think we had like 20 people cheering for us. They had like big heads of our faces. Like, we were so lucky. That's great. It's like kind of sprinkling at the start. And I was like, and my coach was like, just keep your shoes dry as long as you can. All right, great. But then the first 3 miles, torrential downpour. We look like soaking wet rats. Feet soaked. You're running. You see water flying out of the top of your shoes. I was like,
that's awful.
This is going to suck. This is really going to suck. But we had made up a rule for the four of us. We said, there's no complaining on race day. You cannot negative talk, because you can really bring down everyone else. So we kept checking in for the first like 13 miles. Like, how's everyone feeling? We're good. We're good. We're good. We hit mile 10, and this is right around where you split from the half. And we had a lot of people we knew running the half, so we stayed with them. And I actually was running with my coach. She did the first half of the race. She like hugged me. She's like, you got this. I'll see you at the finish.
Oh, so that's really great. Nice.
I was so lucky. Oh my goodness. And but I remember around mile 10, you did the check. How's everyone feeling? Everyone's like, I'm fine, but my feet hurt. And it wasn't like, you know, when you do your long runs, your feet hurt around like 18, like they just kind of, you're like, I'd really like to stop hitting the pavement. It felt like that. At my, and it felt like your skin of your feet was kind of starting to peel off. And I was like, shoot, this is gonna be a long race. And like, obviously it wasn't actual pain. It's just like your feet hurt. Sort of thing. So we're like, okay. We keep going. We split off. You're on a bridge, and you can see the half marathoners, and you can see the marathoners. And there's a lot of people on this side, and there's very few on this side. And I think that's when it hit me that I was like, oh, we are now in the race. Basically, the race has restarted. And they're going to go finish, they're going to get the post run beer, and we still have another 13.1 to go.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a tough pill to swallow, but it was exciting to be on the other side. And you're like, I'm the one who's doing it this time. I'm not on the other side watching these brave souls. Like, I'm doing it. I think, honestly, like, we never felt, or like, even myself, we never really felt that bad. But I remember around mile 17, mentally, it got really hard, because when you trained up to 20 miles, when you hit mile 17, you're like, I only have 3 to go. And that's not that bad at that point, right? At mile 18, I have 2 to go. 19, I have 1 to go. Okay, well, in the race, when you see the mile 17 marker, you don't have 3 to go. You have 9 to go. And I had realized that. And everyone said you hit the wall at 20, so I was so prepared for 20. But at 17, I was like, oh my God, I have 9 more miles. And at that moment, it felt like you hadn't done anything. You hadn't accomplished it. You felt like you did not have 17 miles on your feet. You're like, I still have. That was really hard. And at that point, like, I had like frustration. I started crying just in frustration of like, we haven't done anything. We're still very much in this race, and we have a long way to go. From 17 to 19 was pretty just mentally tough, but it was one of those things of like, I cried for about 10 seconds, got it out. And it was just like a few tears. And I was like, you know, I knew this was going to happen. Just get over it. And you got to move forward, because you have 9 miles left in this race. This race is starting over. So from 17 to 19, I just was like, man, like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Once I saw 20, I was like, holy crap, like, you made it. Like, you've made it to 20. And I really felt like a new wind at that point. Not really, because my feet did hurt really bad. But mentally, I felt really good, because I was like, holy, you know, every step from this point forward is uncharted territory. I've never gone this far. So every step, I was like, oh my gosh, the farthest I've ever gone. Mile 21, oh, I've never run this far. So it was kind of fun, minus, like, again, our feet just hurt, and it would pour, then we would dry off, and it would pour, and we would dry off. So
couldn't catch a break.
We weren't hot, but, you know, and someone goes, you can get trench foot. And I said, why would you tell us that?
During the race, they said that?
Someone's like, we have to watch out for trench foot. And we're sitting there like, guys, we can't change it. Like, we don't have any ways to change our shoes right now.
Right.
So that... The random stranger who said that, they probably shouldn't have, but it's all right. So,
yeah.
And luckily, we had like all the crowd support from my family and friends. We saw them a few times on the course. So we were like looking forward, like, hey, like, next time we see friends and family is this mile. So just get to this mile. That was really good. So mile 20 felt like a new wind. Ellie chugged a White Claw, because Pittsburgh is just, it's a freaking party. So Ellie's chugged a White Claw. It's pouring down rain. Like, we're delusional, slap happy. We're having the time of our lives. I think around mile 22, I just really, like, I felt good, but I was over it. Like, I really wanted to stop running at that point, but I had made the goal. I was like, as long as I feel good, I want to run the whole thing. And I did, which I was happy with. So Ellie called my coach, Coach Alicia, who was like, yeah, we need you to come get her. And Alicia had finished the half, and she started to run the course backwards to come get me. And I have a lot of issues with my stomach, with the gels. Like, it just does not, it's really hard. So we switched to more whole foods, and I realized that's much better for me. So like crackers, crackers, bread, oranges, more whole foods. So she came back with like saltines and pretzels, met us around 23. And so from 22 on, I was like, I just have to get to Coach Alicia. She's walking her way back to me. I'm going to see her soon. Like, it's going to be okay. You're safe with her. Like, she knows how you run, whatever. And she's going to talk me through it the next 3 miles. Get to Coach Alicia, eat a little bit, felt really good. 23. I was like, wow, you're like really in it. Hit mile 24, and mile 24. I was like, you got 2.2 to go. That's nothing. I started to get really excited at that point.
Yeah.
Obviously, still like feet really freaking hurt at that point, and your hips are really tight, but
the little glimmer is all you need at that point. It's like it'll push you through.
24 is like a really high number, right?
Yeah.
And then we hit 25, and I was 25 when I ran it. And I remember being like, I'm 25 years old, and I'm looking at mile 25. Holy crap, is that amazing? And I felt like pure euphoria of just, you've done it. Like, you are really close.
Yeah, that's
great. Getting closer. I text like my parents, like, hey, we're at mile 25. We're going to see you in the next 15 minutes. And sending that text of like, we're going to see you in 15 minutes is like, I mean, we took over 6 hours. It's been quite a bit of time. So Pittsburgh, I love how they do the race. They have very dramatic long finishes, which I prefer. I want to see it. I want to feel the emotion. I want to hear the build up and the music, all these things. So we're running and I start to see the big yellow sign. And I was like, oh my God, is that mile 26? Because some races do not have like mile 13 or 26 at the end. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I think that's mile 26. Like, and we're running closer and I'm starting to be able to see the 2 and the 6. And I just start crying because it was one of those things of, even at 25, I still didn't believe I could get to it. 26 is getting closer. I hear my dad screaming for it. I hear my mom. I hear all my friends. You can start to hear the music. So you're down this long chute. See mile 26 to the left side. Like I'm running, like I'm visualizing it now. And I was fortunate enough, I ran it with Dick's Sporting Goods. So the other athletes who ran with me were all sitting there screaming my name. So there's no one else on the course except the four of us who are running. So I'm hearing them all scream for us. I'm like, oh my God, like we're so close.
Yeah.
And they ran with us for a little bit. And then we turned the corner right after passing 26 and you can see the finish line. And I'm like, holy, it's there. Like it's there. And we're running closer to it. Obviously everyone drops behind us. It's just Ellie and I, my cousin and Ryan, my other cousin, they went forward. I said, you guys, you go together. Like we'll go together. We're getting closer. And all my family's on my right side screaming Katy Perry, Fireworks playing. I always hated that song and now I freaking love it because I visualize the finish.
Yeah.
And I look up and I see the banner. It's like Pittsburgh Marathon, May 1st, 2022. And it was my brother's birthday on May 1st. I was like, oh, shoot, I got to call my brother. I remember thinking that. And it was just it getting closer and closer to us. I was like, holy shit, like we're doing it. In that next point too, it really, really hit me. And I was like trying to cry, but I was so tired. It was hard. And Ellie starts crying because she's was so happy to help someone reach their first marathon. And, you know, you try to put your arms up, but like they feel like cinder blocks.
Yeah.
So happy. And we picked it up at the end and I can usually sprint pretty hard at the end. And my coach is like, do not do that because your legs are very tight. You've been using the same muscle. Don't sprint because you're going to pull something. So, okay, good to know. And we cross and we finish. And I'm like, we just ran a marathon. I just ran 26.2 miles. And all I wanted to do was sit down because my feet really hurt. And everyone, like other people are coming up to you and they're like, how do you feel? And I was just like, I don't know. It was one of those things you couldn't express like how good you felt crossing that finish line for the first time. And the thing that does sucks is you cannot mimic the first time you finished a marathon. You will never get that same feeling again. That's a little upsetting, but I put that moment up there with like me literally one getting engaged.
Yeah.
My master's, like those moments in your life, it's one of the top memories. And I can still so vividly remember every moment of that race. And it's like, I get chills because it was just so amazing. It was so good.
Yeah. Even despite all the rain and all the like hardships you went through, it's what's so fun about the marathon distance is like you cross that finish line and it's almost like, I mean, you're going to remember all of that, but you know, it's almost like, God, I worked so hard for this thing and I finally got to see it come to fruition. It's, it's not a feeling that I think any of us can really describe until you kind of go through it for your first time.
And it's one of those things you sit there too. And you think how lucky you are that you were able to do it because the majority of people, if you look in a room, will never, ever, ever, ever get to experience that moment you had. They will never know what you felt. Like they could see you train, they could see you cross the finish line, but they will never know how good it felt to you to cross that finish line. I'm like, that is such a unique experience that any marathoner is lucky that we've been able to achieve.
Absolutely.
But it's, and then it makes you feel pretty cool. That you're like, I ran a marathon.
Yeah. Once it settles in and you can like actually form a thought afterwards, you're like, yeah, I just did that. Yeah.
You put the medal on your card.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's my entire personality now. I've fully adopted this.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. So race day, I mean, I feel like I always under explain what you truly went through on that day by saying like it went pretty smooth. But it seems like for the most part, for your first marathon experience, like everything kind of went according to plan, minus the rain and all, and maybe
literally everything
and all that.
Training wise, like I didn't throw up, which is pretty common for me to do because of I hate eating while running.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. Like everything went perfect fueling wise, minus just the rain. We were good. But the good thing with the rain is we weren't hot. So.
Yeah. No, that's perfect. Yeah. Can't complain at all. And you had great crowd support. That's important. Wow. Did you like strategically know where they were going to be throughout the race? Mm-hmm. Like, did you place them or did they just kind of pop up in random spots?
A little bit. We had them placed as well because, and what I do now with any race is I don't like to carry extra fuel because it's like extra weight and just it, yeah, like, it's heavy on your sides, right? So we placed them at like, I think it was like mile 2 just to cheer, mile 9, I think like 13. So at mile 13 or whatever it was, like my friend had an extra water bottle totally filled for us. We didn't end up taking it because we just were able to fill at the stations, but then she had extra gels for all four of us. She had like our sunglasses and hats. Like if it got sunny out, do you want these now? So they had everything we could need. And when we were like a mile from them, Ellie's like, hey, we need Lauren's sunglasses. Nicole needs 2 gels. Like we need salt pills. Like, so they were restocking us, which was nice.
That's great. Yeah.
So that's kind of nice though too. And it makes, I feel like it gives them kind of a task. So they feel like they helped you, which they literally without them, you could not do it. So
yeah. Give your spectators something to do so that they don't, they're not just bopping around the whole day looking for you. Give them a task.
Okay, you don't have a free day either. We're all working on
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Right. We're a team here. We all came together.
Literally.
No, that's great. So first marathon experience was pretty good. I love the finish line stories. Every time I hear them, I get my own chills because everybody has everybody's experience is a little bit unique, but everybody gets to experience that for the first time. And it's just, it's very cool. So from there, what did you kind of go into recovery mode from there? What was next steps for you post first marathon?
Eating a lot of food. But really after that, I said I did not want to run for at least a month because I went a little psychotic on the first one. I did not miss a single run. And there was probably a few days I could have skipped just because I was so exhausted, or I was like fighting a cold or something, which was good. I was so strict, but also I was like, you can miss a few. It's really okay. And then we were entering summer because it's hot down here. In for anywhere from like June to August, I really lower my mileage because it's just brutal.
Yeah.
So after that, I didn't run for at least a month. And I remember I like tried to come back to running. I didn't really want to. I was like, no, like I don't want to do it right now. I started going to like more run clubs, which took the pressure off. And basically all of May to like August, I really did not run a whole lot because I didn't want to.
Yeah.
So yeah, but then I was a little psychotic and I caught the bug a little bit. I was like, I think we should do another one. So I texted like the crew, 26.2 crew. I said, hey guys, like, what if we do another one? Like, all right, what are you thinking? So
then we ran sure on. they were down.
Yeah, they were.
Immediately. They were in. I feel like, and if anybody texts me and asks if I want to run a race, I'm already responding yes, even if it's not in my best interest. So
yeah,
it's
like, always tough to get those texts.
Yeah, right. Cool. And then I know you ran the Miami Marathon for your second time around. You mentioned Ellie a couple of times. We haven't mentioned it yet. Past episode, Ellie. That is who we're talking about when we're talking about that race. So how did you guys land on Miami?
It was the only one that fit in with my schedule. So just like I had a few friends getting married in the spring, like from January to May. And I was thinking, I was in a few of those weddings. I was like, well, I really like want to enjoy the bachelorette parties and like the weddings. Mm. And typically if I'm training like that, I don't drink like hardly at all because it just affects your sleep and whatever. If I'm not training, like I'll go out, I'll have some drinks, whatever. But that's the one time I get a little more strict on it. It's like, well, I really want to like go to the bachelorette trip and not have to worry about running 13 miles on a long run and like just kind of not getting to have as much fun with my friends that I don't see very often and whatnot. So I remember the bachelorette party was in February and the wedding was in March. And so I said, well, the only one that doesn't interfere with that is Miami, unfortunately. And I've done the Miami half and it's just a very hot race because it's always hot here.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what, but it would be cool to do like a hometown race. And it was cool to do it, but it was brutal. So on the bright side, I did get to enjoy the bachelorette party and the wedding, but
that's good. And you don't have to travel too far. I guess that helps too.
Yeah, part of my soul did die on that course that day, but like, it's fine.
Yeah.
So,
well, I know we heard a little bit from Ellie's perspective, but I'll let you take it away on kind of what Miami race day was like for you.
So if you remember Ellie talking about it, we had totally opposite experiences in Miami. So, well, we woke up. And it was the hottest day on record for the race. Said nice. I think it was like 84, felt like 87.
Jeez.
Which for January, that's like a little criminal. And the issue with Florida,
yes.
Florida winter, my favorite time of year, there's no clouds in the sky. right? So there's no cloud covered. So it's okay. We knew it was going to be a hard race, right? And we was really focused on like hydration, because that's, and Miami always brings out more medical and a lot of like IVs, because typically a lot of people do drop, like physically collapse because of dehydration. That's very common. So it was, we were fully prepared of like, if we have to walk, it's okay. You know, we covered all the bases. This is 8 months after my first one. So felt a little bit better going into it. I wasn't as nervous. I had a much harder training cycle for it, just like, but it's fine. We got there. So we pull up to race day, very nervous. Miami puts on quite a show. Like you pull up, there's high energy. They got a freaking DJ blasting, lights going. It's like 4 a.m. because the race starts early because it's so dang hot. They sure. And there's like apartment complexes, high rises right there. They're shining lights, all these things, like the music, the DJs, you got Bad Bunny playing. Like it's fully Miami. That's great. It's so fun. We're sitting in the corrals. We're like, all right, we're going to do this. Again, we had our crew like out on the course. We had a PowerPoint put together of where they're, how they're going to take the Metro to meet us on the second half. We had it all covered.
That's so funny. Yeah.
So we start, and the first half of the race, like the half marathon, is absolutely awesome. You run to Miami Beach, which is just absolutely iconic. You get to see the sunrise. It's so beautiful. When you come back from Miami Beach, you enter downtown again. If you're doing the half, you would go to finish. The full, you keep going, obviously straight. So I'd say the first like 14 miles, we felt really good, like insanely good. We were vibing. We're just chilling. Like we're having fun. It's me, Ellie, and Lauren again. We see my best friend, Meg. She gives us some salt pills. We're sitting there like on video. We're cracking up. We got just salt pills in our hands. It looks like a little bit of a drug deal. Like we're cracking up. Right. And we were a little nervous for mile 16 because they send you out to the Rickenbacker Bridge. Now you don't go over it. I know that doesn't mean anything to you, but this bridge in Miami, obviously water on both sides. It's now like 10:30. So the sun is up. You have water reflecting. There is no shade on this bridge. There is nowhere to hide. And they make you run under the bridge because you can like take your car and turn around. You don't have to go over the bridge. We have to go run under it. And I remember I was a little nervous because I was like, this is where your heart rate's going to skyrocket because you're really in the sun for about 3 miles. Like there is no, there's nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. So we had those like little towels. We had them frozen that we put on our necks, and we had hats. So we were like fully prepared. We start running on the bridge. There's like a band, you know, I'm like, my stomach's getting a little weird, which it happens. We're used to it. Okay. At mile 16, it just like pretty fast, I was like, Ellie, I don't feel good. And I like, I knew, I was like, we're screwed. I knew at that point it was gonna be really hard. And I, you know, proceeded to throw up everything I had eaten prior. All fuel, hydration, everything was out. And I was like,
yeah.
And like my stomach, I mean, I'm used to it, right? It was not to be TMI, but it was way more vomit than I was comfortable with. And I was like, this is actually now scary because I forcefully rejected all the hydration in my body. In this race, hydration is critical. We call Coach Alicia and we're like, hey, this just happened. I'm walking at this point. Like I felt a little bit better. I was like, let's walk, right?
Yeah.
So walking, she's like, she needs to get food in her stomach right now. You have to put calories in. You have to keep something down. I was able to get a few gummy bears down, but I did not, like, I knew at that point, I was like, you have 10 miles left in this race. Like, this is not, you are really entering, like, this is not going to be good. And my coach is like, you need to decide in the next mile or two if you're going to continue or drop out. This is not for your ego. This is a safety thing. This course is unforgiving. There's nowhere to hide. There's not a lot of shade in the second half. There's not as much like aid stations with like Pittsburgh. I felt like had more food and more aid stations. Miami really just has the water and Gatorade. There isn't as much on the course. And there's no crowd support in Miami. Absolutely not. So it was going to get really hard. I said, okay, well, my parents are sitting at like mile 17, 18 with more fuel and stuff for us. Like at least get there. I have noticed Dr. Pepper is like my favorite thing to drink when I'm feeling really low in a race. All the sugars and stuff feel really good.
Sure. Yeah.
So she goes, have them get a Dr. Pepper, get the bubbles out and have her sip that. It's fast sugars. Like it's going to help her. So we're starting to get to my parents. It's like, okay, like I'll figure it out then. Those next like 3 miles were really hard and I'm trying to keep food in. I was not very successful. And at one point I'm like sitting on the ground, like crying because I felt really bad. And Ellie's forcefully putting a goo in my mouth of like, you have to take something. So, okay, I get to my parents, I sit on the curb and I just start bawling. It was like mile 19. And I was like, you have 7 to go. You feel like absolute crap. Like, this is, it's late in the day. You're now in jeopardy of getting swept up by the bus. What do you want to do? I'm sitting there. I'm like checking with myself. I'm like, I'm not dizzy. I don't feel like I'm going to collapse, but I don't feel great. Yeah. And it's like, do you just want to quit? Do you, if you quit, you're going to come back next year. You're going to make yourself do it again because you got to redeem yourself. I'm sitting there like, crap. Like, and I just like, it was really an internal battle of what do you want to do? So I told Ellie and Lauren, I said, you guys go finish the race. Like, you paid to do this. Leave me and go finish this race. And like, we're not leaving you. And I literally like had to yell at them. I was like, go, because if someone's doing it, I want it to be you guys. So my mom, like, I love my mom. She was the one who convinced me to get up. And she said, I will walk with you until midnight. We will finish this race together. Like, even if they shut down the course. Because I knew at that point I really was having a hard time running because I just really was struggling. So, okay. So my parents start to walk with me, and they're on the sidewalk and I'm on the course. So we start walking, hit mile 20, still don't feel good. And like, I feel bad like saying it, but I almost wish my body just would have collapsed because I'm too stubborn to stop.
Yeah. I would have made the decision easy. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people, like, it wasn't that serious. I could have dropped out. Like, it's not worth putting myself in risk, but I also knew like I wouldn't stop unless my body forced me to. So I kept going, hit like mile 21. I still don't know what I'm going to do. I was like, I'm just going to keep moving forward. And like, at this point I'm just chugging water because I was like, something's going to stick. Was I continuing to throw it up? Yes, I was. Did I have minor stages of heat exhaustion? 100%. I probably did. Not a great idea, but I'm here. So yeah. I don't recommend it. It's fine. But it was really bad because we're in like a residential-ish part of Miami. People are like eating brunch, like really nice area. I definitely gave them quite a show to watch at brunch. And I was fine. My mom's like, you know, like, are any of you worried about her? Like, do you care? Like, she's literally dying. So we always
they're just going along with their brunch and not even batting an eye.
Where that happened every month when I do the run with FP Movement. And I'm like, oh, that's where part of you died on the course. That's a nice reminder. So then I think at like 21, the rest of my friends, like I had my college best friend, my hometown best friend, like I had a lot of people there as well. And my mom had to take the metro to the finish line because my mom's like really short. She's got short legs. Me and my dad are quite tall. She couldn't keep up walking with us. So we sent Joan to the finish line. And the thing that was funny is, so on race day, you should always share your location and keep in case tracking stops working so people can still follow you. My mom had my phone. So my friends who are watching me, Ellie's sending updates, right? Of like, hey, she's not doing good. Like, send voice memos. Like, she needs help, right? People see my location jump like fast. And they thought I pulled out.
Yeah.
No one could get a hold of me, right? And I'm still head down, walking as fast as I can, like trying to move forward. So no one knew. So that's like funny. So then like my best friend, Meg, my best friend, Manuela, Meg's mom all jump in with my dad and start walking on the sidewalk with me. Cause my dad also was like, I'm not leaving you because I am slightly worried for your well-being. And this way we can, if something happens. Okay. Mile 22, nah, still not feeling great, but I'm like, I think I could do this. Meg's mom goes, you know, not to freak you out, but I can see the bus behind you. And I was like, I swear to God, if I get swept at this point, I'm at mile 22, I'm going to scream. And I go to turn around and my dad yells at me and goes, don't you look at that bus. It's not going to catch you. And he's like, I will lay in front of it. You are not getting picked up by that bus. Keep moving.
Yeah.
And so I needed to hear that because this is why I think you need to have someone with you, because you can get in your head so bad of, listen, the defeat is right behind me. I could easily give in and get picked up. And, I technically tried the best that I could and I couldn't run. Like, I physically couldn't run anymore. Okay. So we get to like 23. And at this point I finally felt like I'm going to finish this dang race. Like, I'm going to do it. This is inevitable. I don't care. So the bus is still kind of close, but we're like, I can figure this out.
Yeah.
We around like 25, I finally was like, all right. And Lauren and Ellie had already finished about 45 minutes in front of me, but they also did not know where I was because they didn't have, my phone was with my mom and my mom didn't know if we stopped because my dad's not answering because he's with me. Like, it was a little chaotic. We hit 25. I send my best friend Manuela to run. I said, go to the finish and tell them that we are coming. Like, we're going to do this. Manuela's running. She has the backpack full of Dr. Pepper. She had the whole thing. And Manuela and Meg and her mom, they did not complain once. And they walked 5 miles with me in this race. And they were like, we can't say anything. Every time I run a marathon, it's not just me. I have so much support and I would never be able to do any of it with it because it's so challenging. So Manuela sprints to the finish. She's like, okay, she's coming. She'll be here in 10 minutes. At this point, me and my dad were so mad because my dad is now end up walking 7 miles on the sidewalk with me. And so we walked the last mile. It was a 13 minute walk. I'm not kidding. We were hauling ass and we were going. I'm so over it. I hate it. It's 1 p.m. at this point. Do you know how hot it is at 1 p.m.?
I can't imagine.
And there's a bridge at 25.8. We had to walk up. Fucking kidding me. There's a bridge. We were so mad. Okay. So we go into the finish shoot, and Miami does a pretty dramatic shoot as well. It's really long and then it curves, right? So I start to see Ellie and Lauren, and they're holding the Embrace the Pace motto, below average running, on the flag.
Yeah.
And at this point, I think there's 4 people behind me in the whole marathon. I'm not kidding. I finished almost dead last. When you finish dead last, you get away with a little bit more. So they begged the race director, please let us jump in behind her. You don't know what she went through. We will not take another medal because Miami is famous for people bib banding and just jumping in for the medals. She's like, we will not take it. You can watch us. Please. She convinced them. They jumped in behind me. My dad's walking on the other side of the barricades, obviously. And my dad's like, you gotta run through the finish. You have to finish this running. So I remember just trying to ball my eyes out. Cause I was like, I never thought, 10 miles ago, I'd be looking at this finish line, and this race quite literally took everything that I had to keep going. And it went completely opposite of everything we had trained for. So they're up with the flag. I'm trying to run, just sobbing. I hear my friends, cause they had spread out on the finish shoot. The other thing is there was no one else there because everyone had already finished. So it was just my friends and family cheering. So I just hear them screaming.
Kind of fun. It's 100% of the noise is for 100% for you. So
I said, talk about my main character moment.
Exactly.
Even the announcers were what does that flag say? Embrace the pace, below average running. And I'm sitting there smiling, that's, this whole community. And I literally could not be more below average at this moment. And I really I finished. I remember I crossed the finish line. I was like, well, thank God that's over because that was brutal. And I felt pretty much okay after. I just had to sit down for an hour and I had another soda, which really revived me. And I had a hard time eating the rest of the day, but it was I also think I was dehydrated for about 3 days afterwards and probably should have had an IV, but it was absolutely brutal. But I think I'm more proud of that race than any race I've ever done because it was to keep going when you feel like your shoulders are melting off your body and you can't run anymore, but you trained. And I was supposed to PR this race easily. And it ended up taking me 1 hour and 6 minutes longer than my first marathon. It could not have went more opposite than what we had hoped for.
Right.
So
that's crazy. Yeah.
It sucked.
Quite the experience. But it sounds like, do you think the stomach, I know you said you have a sensitive stomach anyways, but do you think a lot of it was heat exhaustion? I would imagine just amplified everything.
Yeah.
That's
I noticed, my thing is if I'm put in direct sunlight for too long, more than 30 minutes, that's when my stomach will really turn. Cause I think I get too hot too fast and I can't keep things in. And that's typically if I run in the shade, I'm really okay. Even in high heat and humidity, but it's the direct sunlight. And I don't really go in sunlight because I'm so scared of skin cancer. So I just self tan and I don't go out, which probably I could train to do it. But I also am I don't want to be out in the sun like that. I don't think it's good for me. So,
So it's just a complete shock to your body then to be in it running for multiple miles.
Yeah. But it was hard. It was very hard. But now I truly was no race will ever, ever be as bad as Miami. And if I can finish that, I can do anything. And you know what? No race has ever been that bad again.
It's a good way to look at it. Yeah. Especially because you had all that crowd support too. And that's something you're going to probably carry on to multiple other races. So imagine that amount of support and love in a race that you actually feel good in. That's going to put all the pieces together, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I think it built a lot of character.
Yeah.
I will never do it again.
Yeah.
Not. So
It's a crazy story, though. Cool. and then I know you ran another... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So Ellie really liked it. And she's like, I think we could do it again. And I said, I would rather kill over and die than do that. We could do the half all day long. Great course.
No. Yeah. We're going to have to pull the clip of her. I think she, like, her quote exactly was, like, I had a great race. Nicole maybe didn't have so great of a race, but I had a great race. We're going to have to pull that for
the last comparison. Last thing I'll say is they had told me after, because, like, it was kind of, like, cool to see at, you know, mile 20 on, there's a handful of us, not many left on the course, and Ellie and Lauren had already gone forward. You look around at the other runners, everyone's got their head down. Everyone is walking. There's not no one. Everyone's fighting something. Ellie and Lauren said, because they started running, right? And they're stronger runners than I am. So they're running past all these people who are fighting through things. And these people they're like, the amount of looks we got of like, where have you been? Like, did you stop? Why do you look so good at mile 22 when we're all like dying? And I just thought it was so funny. I was like, how mad do you think you'd be if you were sitting there walking, fighting through something, and you see these two really strong runners come? You'd probably be
just
real
like
mad.
Zigzagging between people.
You're like, that must be nice. So they said they felt a little bad because they were fine running with me at a pace significantly less. So when they were finally able to go at their speed, they were good. I was like, thanks, guys.
Thanks for that.
So.
Well, cool. Well, I mean, two completely opposite marathon experiences. And I know you had a third marathon under your belt. I guess we don't have to go into all the details for your third one. But what did you, I guess, take from your first and second experience that you maybe changed or did differently for your third one?
Well, I said it can't be as bad as Miami, that's for sure. So it
wasn't. Yeah, all up from here.
Literally. I did Dallas. Also, Dallas, super awesome course, like similar to Pitt. I feel like it's very... a lot of crowd, like it was just great. It was super fun. In December, it was actually freezing outside, so I think it was like 30 degrees, which I hate being cold, but I preferred. I didn't sweat at all the whole race, which was amazing. We didn't train as well as we had wanted, so that it got a little tough around like 18, and we had to walk around it, but still, like, no complaints. Oh, also, Dallas is very hilly, if you didn't know that. So it's like 1200 feet elevation gain. Had no idea that was coming, so that sucked. But beautiful course. I really can't complain with that one. Everything went pretty much to plan with it. And I was like, listen, you're not going to be as bad as it was in Miami. And I just kept telling myself that. And it really helped.
If anything, you've got a threshold for like a bad race now that you can only go up from there. So it's probably going to make everything else seem like a piece of cake.
And it was such a fun race. Like, I know Ellie had a bit of a harder time with that one. She was coming off an injury and stuff. But like, no complaints. It was great. I wouldn't run it again. I don't really want to run the same full course again, but it's great. Really fun. That was great time. Good barbecue food there too.
They have great food. So got to kind of put the pieces together one more time after Miami.
And then I said, I'm done for a minute. I don't want to do this for a while.
I was gonna ask kind of what's coming up next. So but before we get there, I'm curious, like, looking back on all three of your experiences, we have a lot of newer runners that listen to this podcast. So if you can, like, offer some advice from your first couple experiences, what advice would you give to those runners?
No matter how hard the race could get, because it will get really hard, you will also feel nervous. Nerves are good. You want to feel nervous. If you don't feel nervous, that's worrisome. You should feel nervous. Races will get hard. Hard is relative to what you can handle. And when you're in that race, to really even the hard miles, try to enjoy every moment, because you only run your first marathon once. You only run your first half marathon once, your first 5K, whatever it is. Enjoy it. Try to remember those mile markers, how you felt, especially when you get to the later miles. Pat yourself on the back for everything you did to get there, because it is not easy to get there. And especially when you see the marathon finish line, I don't care how bad you feel, you pick your head up to the best that you can. You try to smile. It's probably not going to look too good, but you try to smile and you put your head up because you did it. That's it.
Yeah. I love that. No, that's great. Cool. And then my last couple of questions are just kind of about fuel, shoes, that kind of thing. I always give the disclaimer that everybody's individual fuel journey is, you're a good testament to that, because I also am a sensitive stomach girly. So everybody's fuel journey is completely individual. Try out everything and anything until you find something that works for you. But for you, what have you liked for fuel over the years?
Not gels, no goos, nothing. I like applesauce pouches. I also... like slices of bread, like whole slices of bread, not the crust. orange slices and bananas. I like to do more whole foods. Gummies are okay sometimes, but they can get a little chewy at the end. But more whole foods I have found way better on my stomach.
Yeah, that's great. A little cheaper too, hopefully.
Yeah, literally.
than, go to Publix, all the gels.
Here's my fuel for the
Cool. And then for shoes, same thing with shoes. Obviously, go to your local running store, get measured and all that good stuff. But what have you liked for shoes over the years?
My favorite pair of shoes ever. The New Balance Fresh Foam 1080s. Men's, though. I always get men's. But I do have big feet, so I've loved them. I do like Hoka's. The Arahis are pretty good. But I think I like the New Balances better.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about New Balance. I gotta try out a pair at our local running store or something that. Give it a shot.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. And then what's coming up next for you? I know you said you're maybe taking a pause on the marathon stuff right now, but do you have anything that you're training for right now or are scoping out or anything like that?
So I'm on a little bit of a setback. I, about 2 months ago, sprained my MCL in my knee pretty bad.
Oh, no.
Went back to the doctor the other week. It's actually a little worse than we thought. And basically, long story short, my left knee is kind of shot, will need to be replaced in my life. Not good news to hear at 27. Did I cry about it? Yes, I did. My doctor, I really love him because he said, you know, and he said from the beginning, he said, what we're going to do, you're still going to run. We're just going to have to change how you train moving forward. So moving forward right now, back in PT, working very specific muscles to help mitigate how fast my knee is going to like break down. Basically, I'm very tall, genetics, and my kneecaps are crooked. Did you know you can have crooked kneecaps? Because you can. So,
did not.
Apparently it's not a great thing. I said, all right. And there's not a lot of cartilage left under my kneecap is the problem. And so it's very common in tall people. I was like, got to stop saying that to me because I can't change how tall I am.
Yeah, I can't help this.
Yeah. So it was nice knowing it was nothing I did. It was inevitable. But it does suck because I will have issues moving forward. And so I did run like a mile yesterday with some walk breaks, which I was really excited about. Felt really good. So the return is just going to be very slow. We're not rushing it because I will have this until it gets replaced, which will be years. And we're just going to get stronger. We're going to do a lot of cross training and figure out how to make it work because I do want to run a marathon in 2025. Now, maybe that goal is delayed till 2026, but now I have something to prove that even with my gimp knee, I could do this. I want to do it. So I'll get there. It's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you can find a left knee on Amazon, send it to me because I could use a new one. But
in the market.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That stinks. But like you said, at least you know it's not anything that you did training wise or anything that you like push yourself too hard on or anything like that. It's, you know, something that you can't avoid. I guess that could give you a little bit of peace of mind.
It's all right. I'm happy that I'm still able to run because a lot of people, like doctors, like no high impact anything. You cannot do it anymore. I met a girl yesterday at the run. She broke her kneecaps twice, both of them.
Wow.
And she's like, I am not allowed to run. I can only walk. I can't do any high impact. And she's like, I miss it. I miss it so much. I said, you need to realize that you still have the ability to do it. And that's what really matters. And he said, my doctor was like, I care about your longevity with being able to work out and run. That's what we're focused on, not right now. So I'm thinking long term. Every night I do my PT exercises, watch the Olympics. Like, you're just changing how you train. That's it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, I hope you share a little bit about that journey because I'm sure there's other people out there that are maybe in similar spots or have gone through something similar. And that could be something that's cool to follow along with is how you kind of work through the whole thing. But I wish you as speedy of a recovery as you can have through that whole thing.
It's okay. Thank you. Thank you.
But cool. Well, thank you so much for walking us through your first couple experiences. We got a lot of great tips for newer runners and runners who've been running for a little bit throughout the whole thing. So appreciate you walking through all that. And it was great getting to know you.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for letting me yap. I always love to talk. So, you know, appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. If you're enjoying My First Marathon, it would mean the world to me if you could rate and review the show. And if you or someone you know has ran a marathon and would like to share your story, I have a guest form to fill out in my bio on Instagram. That username is @myfirstmarathonpod. See you on the next one.